Thank you, choir. Sermon's going to be a downgrade after that, sorry. We are continuing our series looking at the heroes of the faith, the women and men in the Bible who had a character trait or did something that is worth copying even today. Last week we heard about Hannah's willingness to give her baby back to God, and Pastor Carol asked us to think about what our baby is and whether we're willing to give it back to God. This week we are setting sail with Noah. And it is curious to me, I have two really big soapboxes that I will get on whenever I have the chance. The other one is an Advent. Come back and you'll hear it then. But this one, it is curious to me that Noah's Ark is one of the go-to children's Bible stories. It's like, you know, in Sunday school or in the children's Bibles, I get it. There's lots of cool animals. It makes for a pretty picture. But more people die in this story than just about any other in the Bible. So, I mean, there's that. And let's imagine that Noah lived in Las Vegas, Sin City, right? And let's imagine that he goes and he liberates all of the animals that were used for the shows. So he's got, you know, like Siberian tigers coming after him and some elephants and so the other beasts are running out of the city with him just before Las Vegas gets nuked. Is that a children's story? Because that's pretty much what goes on in Noah's Ark here. So sorry, I'll step down from my soapbox now until I talk about Noah again, then I'll get back on it. But it's worth addressing at least how many people die in this story, in the flood, and why did God do it? In our first text that Carol read, God describes the problem as the earth and the people in it being corrupt. Did you hear that word corrupt over and over and over again? And I might translate that rotten to the core. We just bought a sack of apples at the grocery store, and they all looked fine on the outside. But when we started cutting them to give them to our boys, all but two of them were rotten inside. Not just like a little brown and bruised, totally rotten. The only thing they were good for was to go on into the compost bin. And that's what God says about the earth and about humanity during the time of Noah. They were ready for the compost bin. The only possible way for them to be useful is to be recycled for the next generation. That is a pretty large pronouncement of judgment. But our focus, as we look at this definitely not a children's story, is on one of the only good apples. We're going to hone in on Noah's response to God's revelation and directions. We heard in our first text how God gave Noah the building plans for the ark. We're going to skip over the part where Noah just does what God tells him to do, and we're going to go right to the animal roundup and the deluge itself. But first, a quick quiz. How many of each kind of animal does Noah bring on the ark? All right, we'll see. We'll see. Listen for the actual answer. Get ready for your mind to be blown. Genesis chapter 7. Then the Lord said to Noah, "Go into the ark, you and all your household. For I have seen that you alone are righteous before me in this generation. Take with you seven pairs of all the clean animals, the male and its mate, and a pair of the animals that are not clean, the male and its mate, and seven pairs of the birds of the air also, male and female, to keep their kind alive on the face of all the earth. For in 7 days I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. And every living thing that I have made, I will blot out from the face of the ground." And Noah did all that the Lord had commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters came on the earth. And Noah, with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, went into the ark to escape the waters of the flood. Of clean animals and of animals that are not clean and of birds and of everything that creeps on the ground, two and two, male and female, went into the ark with Noah as God had commanded Noah. And after 7 days, the waters of the flood came upon the earth. And those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in as God had commanded them, and the Lord shut him in. The flood continued 40 days on the earth, and the waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. Well, a tourist was visiting the Grand Canyon, and if you've ever been there before, there are some precipitous drops, even like right next to like all the little cabins that you can stay in. And sure enough, this visiting tourist took an unfortunate, fateful step, and the rock crumbled, and he started tumbling down the cliff face, but somehow he was able to grab onto a bush and was dangling there in the air. Now, this tourist was not an overly religious man, but these were extenuating circumstances. And so he cried out, "If there's anyone up there, please send some help and fast." And God heard this plea and decided to show up. And so with a voice out of the clouds, responded to this prayer, "I am the Lord, the God of heaven and earth. I am here to help you. I will catch you in my sure and mighty hands. Simply let go of the bush and you shall be delivered." After a long pause, considering his options, the man cried out, "Is there anyone else up there?" I wonder if Noah ever wanted to ask, "Is there anyone else up there?" I mean, let's enumerate the many reasons he might have to be a little concerned about this plan. First, God is telling him that everyone he knows, other than his direct family, all of them are going to die. They're going to be killed by this flood. Kind of a downer to start with. Second, God tells him to build the largest boat the world had ever seen. The ark's dimensions are pretty similar to like a new Arleigh Burke-class destroyer for the U.S. Navy. And even with automation and an army of workers, those take 5 or 6 years to build. Today, Noah was given a little more time, a little more grace. He had 80 years to build the boat, although he was 500 when this started, so maybe God gave him a little extra grace since he wasn't as spry as he used to be. And we'll count that as a third reason to be a little concerned about God's plan, or maybe to want a different God, because not only did God tell him to build this seemingly impossible boat, but he also gave him a job that was going to take him 80 years to finish. I mean, I like job security just like the next person, but come on, that's ridiculous. Fourth, God told him to round up all these animals. It wasn't just like herding cats. There were actually cats to herd into it. This is crazy. Can you imagine the smell when they were on the boat for a year? But reason number five is my personal favorite. Reason number five is the shocker. Are you ready for it? Hold on to your pews. In the plans for the ark, we heard that God told Noah to build a giant door for loading all the animals. That makes sense. But there's something missing from the plans. There is no way to close the door. No rope, no winch, no pole, nothing. This is a boat with a giant hole in the side of it and no way to close it. God never addresses this. He tells Noah, you know, to build this boat, never even mentions the giant hole in the side of it or what he's going to do with it. And then he tells Noah, "Hey, it's going to rain 7 days. Go get in the boat." Still nothing about the giant hole. I mean, many of my relatives have like a lot of anxiety around travel. I can just imagine how worked up they would feel looking at this big hole in the boat with the flood coming. Have you ever felt like God's plan for you or plans for this world seem to be missing something? Maybe God's plan, from your perspective, has a few holes in it. Well, from Noah's perspective, God's plan had a very large and very literal hole in it. You remember Moses, right? Kind of a big deal in the Old Testament. A great prophet, leader of Israel, faithful man of God, one who saw God face to face and had conversations personally. That guy, do you remember what he said when he didn't like God's plan? There are several chapters of Moses whining and complaining and bargaining with God to change the plan. I can relate to that. But what does Noah do? Several times over these chapters in Noah, the Bible reports Noah did all that God had commanded him. Forget all the animals. Noah's obedient response to this crazy plan, that's a story. And then here's what actually happens. Here's how God addresses that hole in the plan. God told Noah the flood would come in 7 days, so load up, get on the boat. And Noah does that. So there they all are. Noah and his family, those animals, they're staring out this giant hole as the rains start. The door is still open. They're still watching. The flooding starts to rise. The door is still open. Can you imagine what Noah's wife and sons are saying to him right now? And finally, finally, God himself closes the door. He never told Noah he was going to do that. He didn't do it before the flood started. He only did it at the last second. No warning, no heads up. Just, you got to trust. I've got a plan in mind for that big hole. But Noah didn't panic. He didn't freak out. He didn't try to fix it himself. How many of you would have gone and grabbed some extra boards and start hammering up that hole? He trusted God. He trusted God even when he couldn't see him. He trusted God when God was silent. He trusted God when there seemed to be a giant gaping hole in God's plan. And even though he had at least five very valid reasons to want to cry out, anyone else up there, he trusted God. Is there anywhere in your life where you want to cry out for somebody else up there? Anywhere you're having trouble trusting God? Anywhere you can't see God or can't hear from God? Anywhere that God's plan seems to have a giant gaping hole in it? Well, for those places, what can we learn from Noah? How can we, like Noah, do what God's command? How can we trust God even when we can't see him? Sometimes, as with Noah, it takes a while to pan out. Hopefully not 80 years for you. Sometimes, as with Noah, God seems to go dark and require your faith rather than constantly telling you you're going to be okay. But God is faithful. Our church administrator, Eleanor, told me this week that her husband, Woody, really enjoyed water skiing and when they lived somewhere else where that was a little more possible. And one time he took off his wedding ring because you don't want to lose it in the lake, right? And so he wrapped it up in the bag on the dock. And after a really good day of skiing, he picked up the bag and it fell out, rolled over to the dock through one of the holes in the dock. Kerplunk. FYI for all the husbands out there, this is bad. So he frantically searched, right? You know, they actually got divers to come out and try to search and find it, but to no avail. The wedding ring could not be found anywhere. But later in the season, Woody decided to get one more skiing trip, and they were actually lowering the water level of the reservoir to get it ready for winter. And he decided, you know, hey, like the dock is just sitting there on sand now. I'll just go take a look one more time. And sure enough, glinting in the sand, right under the dock, there was the ring. Jesus tells a parable kind of like this. He says that in the kingdom of heaven is like a woman who lost her wedding coins, kind of like a ring for us. And she wouldn't stop searching until she found it. And so our faith is at its best when both sides are searching endlessly. We know that God is searching endlessly for us. And we can search endlessly for God, even when we think we're lost, even when we think that God has forgotten us, even when we can't see God, even when we feel like we're the ring that has fallen through the cracks, buried in the sand, where no one will find us. God is still there. God is faithful. That faithfulness from God is what inspired Noah to just do what God had told him to do. That faithfulness from God is what inspired Noah to build a boat with a giant hole in it because he trusted that God had a plan. Sisters and brothers, sometimes we can't see God. Sometimes we can't feel God. Sometimes we can't hear God. Sometimes we think that we have been forgotten or lost, but God is faithful. God never stops. God never gives up. How might things be different if you trusted in God's faithfulness, even when you can't see him? Amen.